think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob,
Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 257 of Low Limit Football on this 7th of October, 2019. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, Hugo Lloris suffers a massive injury that has him ruled out of possibly the rest of the season. We'll let you know what had happened and what it means to Tottenham Hotspur. Decision day is over in MLS. We'll recap all the drama and give you all the playoff matchups. The Derby d'Italia certainly provided drama on the weekend. We'll let you know all about it. And hint, hint, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And Chelsea finds themselves in a European position despite the transfer ban, having a brand new coach, and a massive winter transfer that doesn't even see the pitch. We're going to discuss that and much, much more with Premier League presenter Olivia Buzaglo, who will be joining us in just a little bit. But first, let me get my man, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How was your road trip?
It was amazing. And for many people that don't know or haven't seen my social media for the last few days, I was in Atlanta. I was actually at the last decision day game of the season. I was in Atlanta for the game against Atlanta United and New England Revolution. It was a great game, 3-1. It was also a kind of bittersweet for some Atlanta fans to see a record be broken all the way in the West Coast that we'll be talking about very soon. But yeah, it was a fun experience. And Joe, like I said, and I think for anyone that's been in that kind of experience, for anyone that really wants to experience a true MLS game, obviously I was in a different section. I was in like one of the boxes on the pitch. Like it's you're like pitch side. You know, I didn't go into the supporters section where one of my friends were. But, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, you have like 50,000 people, a beautiful stadium. You know, the area is super nice. Weather is great. There's so much to do then. Yeah, if you really want the full experience of a true team here in the United States, I'd go to Atlanta.
And if you wanted the true experience of Atlanta United hosting the New England Revolution in Atlanta, you're going to get your chance to see the rematch, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be possible.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Without getting too far ahead on the show, we'll definitely talk about that a little later, dude. I'm glad you had a good time. I was definitely following along, and it looked like a lot of fun. So, and greatly the atmosphere that you got for the MLS playoffs. You know, basically leading in, we all know Atlanta has a huge fan base, a great fan base, and certainly exciting to see. I, on the other hand, was back home in miserable Connecticut. And I managed to bounce between the Portland San Jose match and the LAFC match. And I stuck with the LAFC match in the end strictly because I wanted to see the last few minutes of Tim Howard's career. Obviously, Tim Howard hanging it up at the end of the season. His season is over for the Colorado Rapids. So, you know, he sails off into the sunset. Also, DeMarcus Beasley called it quits on a season and on a career for the Houston Dynamo. And they're out of the playoffs as well. One person that did not get to hang up his boots just yet is Nick Raimondo, who's also announced his retirement at the end of the season, however, is continuing on in the playoffs. So we're going to talk about those matchups in a little bit. But a lot of legends basically stepping off the pitch for the last time on the weekend in MLS, Rob. At least American legends, that's for sure. So let's do trivia. Okay. And the trivia is my honor tonight. And the trivia has a Derby d'Italia feel for it. So if you're ready, Rob, Gonzalo Higuain scored the game winner for Juve on the weekend against Inter in the Derby d'Italia. He's also the last person to score the game winner for Juventus the last time Juve beat Inter at the San Siro, which was on April 28th of 2014. And with the two goals, he is not even in the top 15 all time for goal scorers in the Derby d'Italia. So my question to you is, can you name me the only two active players in the top 15 of goal scoring in the Derby d'Italia? There's two players that are currently active that are in the top 15 of the Derby for goal scoring, and you need to give me those two names.
Okay.
All right.
Definitely will.
All right. We'll come back to that in a little bit. Opening thoughts tonight. And you and I decided what, you know, we talked about what we wanted to talk about before you went on your trip. And the one that we really wanted to focus on was the Christian Pulisic and the time that he was getting. I know we're going to get into the weeds a little deeper with Olivia in a little bit. But Christian Pulisic, at the time you and I talked about this, Rob, had not seen the pitch in the Premier League in the entire month of September. He was left off the off the pitch against Lille in their Champions League tie, a Champions League tie that saw them win, and one that many would agree would have wanted to see him. He was the big transfer. He's the biggest transfer right now. In 2019, if you think about it, for Chelsea, coming over for, I believe it was $73 million from Borussia Dortmund, and has really struggled to find playing time for himself, with the likes of Mason Mount playing very well, Willian playing exceptionally well, Callum Hudson-Odoi is now returning. I know he doesn't play the same spot, but Tammy Abraham has also had a massive surgence, scoring goals for Chelsea left and right. And you know, we talked about how he was kind of the quote-unquote replacement for Eden Hazard as Hazard moved on to Real Madrid. But he's really struggling to get time. And I think the way we wanted to look at this was this the right move or the wrong move for both Chelsea? Was it the right move or the wrong move for Christian Pulisic, given that he is just 21 years old? And I know we've been watching him for a few years, but he has, you know, his career is still relatively young, so was it the right move for him to move to Chelsea, to the Premier League, or to even just leave Germany in general?
Well, obviously, and we'll get to this in the interview that we had with Olivia as well, but I think, given my opinion as well, I think that, you know, for any team to pay that much money on a player is because they're confident in him and they're confident of the services that he could provide. I mean, you know, it's not every day that, you know, a team's like Chelsea or anyone in the world would cash out 64 million euros or 73 million, whatever, in that range for an American player. So clearly, and you know, obviously the Premier League has been notorious for their overspending on multiple players. I mean, we've seen that for years, Joe. So this is something that is not new at all. But, you know, like you said, he's still 21 years old. And I think that given that there's just so many players that are coming up right now, and, you know, the fact that they had this transfer ban for this season, it kind of does feel like a blessing in disguise in a way, because you're seeing players that were never given a chance, that were always on loans or just, you know, rotting the bench for most of the season, you know, get those opportunities, you know, get those chances to finally play real competitive Premier League football and do well and shine. And, you know, because they provide that flair and they provide that resurgence and, you know, awareness that, you know, maybe not other teams have because of their ability to spend and on experience from all across the world. So I see that as maybe a case for Pulisic as being that person that is kind of the outlier of not getting the opportunity. And of course, it's still early on, but I think what really has been kind of, it's kind of, I wouldn't say pissed me off, but has been a bit frustrating to see is the kind of the debate about, oh, how in the games that he has played, he's shown more than what these players who have played multiple games have been able to do. And I generally don't think that's a reasonable excuse as to why a player should play. I don't think really that any player is deserved to play unless they are really, really good and really could decide a team, decide a game for them. Pulisic hasn't done that yet. You know, he scored a couple. He has the most assists out of the joint by a couple players, but he has the most assists than any other player so far this season. But he isn't that type of player that is going to decide games yet, because, you know, I mean, he's going into English football for the first time. He's still getting himself, because, I mean, you know, Germany and England are very, very different. You know, Germany is much more technical, whereas England is much more physical. So, you know, it's only a case of him trying to be accustomed in a way of the style. And, you know, as a professional, you're supposed to accustom to any league that you play for, regardless of where you're coming from. And that's just the case of how good you can be. But I think for this guy, for many Americans, I want him to take the next step and be that American player. Because, you know, we've seen Joe. We've seen him since he was 17 playing for the national team. We see what he's capable of doing at Dortmund. He is talented. We all know that. We know what he's doing. We know exactly the type of player that he is. Mm-hmm. It's just a case of, you know, I guess people are just very impatient. You know, yeah. I mean, I think that's the word that I have to describe. I think people are just impatient because, you know, we see this player, you know, on this national team, you know, who is probably shining more than any other player so far that we have, that the expectations are just big and we want him to succeed. And, you know, it's not out of like, you know, just pressure. It's out of support. And I think for a player like him that is into a young team, that I would assume Frank Lampard is doing the best that he could to promote this youth, you know, in a way, Joe, you know, Pulisic is one of those players. You know, he's still young. I mean, 21 is very young. And, you know, in promoting youth, you know, your Mason Mounts, your Kanovs and the Doys, you know, your Tammy Abrahams, you know, they're still young too, but, you know, that's still kind of the age group you're thinking about. You know, it's not a case of, oh, he's, you know, these players were, you know, from the academy, so they obviously know the game much more. No, if you have the talent, and, you know, I'd credit Pulisic, and we've always credited him as well for his professionalism, regardless of where he's played. I always credit his professionalism, you know, the fact that he said that, you know, he's not going to complain, and, you know, all he has to, yes, it is frustrating to not play. But at the same time, the fact that he's not giving up and that he's just going to try to work hard and make the best out of it until Lampard does give him that opportunity where, you know, he will showcases his talent. I think that just shows the professionalism in a player that, you know, it's not the player that has been frustrated. It's the fans, which kind of works, I think, for him. Yeah. Because if he's still confident that he will get those opportunities, then I think that will just help him mature more as a good player as the season goes on. And what is really still an early season.
Sure, of course. You know, when I look back on it, I thought to myself, I didn't like the move initially.
I did too.
Yeah, I think it's just for me, you know, looking back on it, the price tag weighs on a player's shoulders. I mean, we even talk about Eden Hazard now, how he's quote unquote not performing to Real Madrid standards because they spent so much money on him. It's that kind of mentality that all of a sudden that price tag carries a very heavy weight. It's a heavier weight in some instances than the number on the back of your jersey. Like we talk about the Juventus number 10, right? The jersey is a heavy weight, but that price tag is an even heavier weight. And I think there's a pain to perform for him right now that he's trying to struggle through. When they made the move, though, Maurizio Sarri was the head coach. And for me, you know, I think back to what he did with Jose Callejon, what he did with Lorenzo Insigne, what he's done with wingers in the past. The guy's a magician, right? So I thought to myself, if this move was going to happen, if it was inevitable, and it really was, Rob, it was inevitable. You know, we talked about him going to United. We talked about Chelsea. We talked about a couple other teams. I mean, it was always going to the Premier League. So the fact that he was going to the Premier League under that coach, who seems to be the wing whisperer, I thought was, you know, the bittersweet, the silver lining around the dark cloud. I thought that this was the coach that could take him to the next level of what we all know he can be in terms of a winger, right? Now, Greg Berhalter obviously has different views of what Christian Pulisic should be, whatever. But I thought that was the right sit. If it was going to happen and it was going to happen to England, that was the right place to go. It turns out, hindsight, Maurizio Sarri knew nothing about the move. Right. And he admitted to that. He didn't even know that they had picked up Pulisic. So there was some mystery there. Then Sarri leaves. And now you bring in Frank Lampard, who's a different style coach and a different type of coach. And he's got less experience. I mean, and that's not to poo poo on Frank Lampard. Fact is fact. I mean, he does have less experience than Maurizio Sarri. So you know, now what are you getting? You know, are you going to get somebody that will liken to Christian Pulisic and how he can play and what he can do? And you thought to yourself, okay, well, it's early going, so we're going to see what happens. And then he sits the entire month of September, and you're like, wow, this is bad. This is really bad, not only for Pulisic, it's also bad for the U.S. men's national team. It's something where he's not getting that time on the pitch that every player needs day in and day out, and it's worrisome. And then you look at the players that he came in. For me, Rob, I never thought that he was coming on to replace Eden Hazard. I honestly thought he was coming in to replace Willian because they played the similar spots.
Yeah, but I think I think the amount and the fact that both players went their ways for a certain amount of money,
yeah,
kind of has that. That's why I said it kind of felt that way because of, you know, obviously they're different type of players, but they play in a similar position. But I think when it comes to getting that amount, you know, when we saw, and you know, this was the rumors that had been going on, when we saw that Pulisic was signed for that amount of money, you kind of had a light bulb in your head and you're thinking, okay, this might lead to Hazard leaving because, you know, you got to balance the books.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and that's why you kind of have to make that comparison. So,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, it is frustrating. I mean, it is frustrating because we want to see a player that is, you know, that is talented, make it out there in one of the, in maybe the most competitive league in the, well, besides the race that we have here, but
yeah,
the tough league that we have in the Premier League, and, you know, in a club like Chelsea, you know, it's a big club. It's, sure, it's one of the biggest clubs in the world. And for him to get that opportunity and to represent, you know, the country as a whole, playing for this type of team, it makes us proud, but, you know, it's, you have to earn it. You have to earn your spots. And the good thing, as I said, you know, the fact that he's staying professional and cool about it, but at the same time, you know, you do question some of Lampard's decisions about, you know, I think the big one was the one that kind of set off a little bit of this debate. That was the fact that he was left out of that Champions League squad against Lille.
Yeah.
You know, you feel worried. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, we just have to see. I mean, we, you know, he's on international break. He's going to play in the Nations League. So we can see, I guess, we could see how he fares there, and maybe if he does pull in a good performance or two in both those games, you know, maybe we see Lampard have a change of thought. But in the end, it's his decision, and he's the one that is calling the shots there.
No doubt about it. Let's sort of table the discussion. I mean, I know we're going to get into it with Olivia in terms of Pulisic, so I guess we'll advance that a little bit further on our discussion. You and I had the pleasure and the luxury of interviewing Olivia Buzzaglo. She is a Premier League presenter. She's been on the show before, and she's absolutely wonderful. But she's also a Chelsea fan, so we got multiple viewpoints there. But we had a great, great interview, and we'd love to play it for you now. Olivia Buzzaglo, joining us now on Low Limit Football, Premier League presenter Olivia Buzzaglo. Olivia, welcome back to the show. How are you tonight?
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm really well. How are you?
Oh, we're fantastic. Thanks for coming on again. I know we're going to get into Chelsea thick and heavy here in a moment, but I wanted to actually open with a Premier League question and really a Premier League coaching question. We look at currently the state of the situation at Manchester United, currently sitting, I believe, 12th in the league, well off the pace here. I mean, although many teams are well off the pace at the moment with Liverpool. We also look at Mauricio Pochettino losing 3-0 on the weekend, also suffering the massive defeat in Champions League to Bayern Munich at home. I know many people are suggesting that one or both of these coaches will be sacked possibly before the end of the season. I personally think Pochettino's kind of built up a little bit of credit taking the team to the Champions League final last year. But for you, do you feel either of these coaches will complete the season, or do you feel neither of them will? And what will happen to those situations?
I think it's a difficult one. I think if any one of them is going to last the season, it's going to be Mauricio Pochettino, because we've seen what he's done with Spurs. They didn't sign anyone last summer, and he's worked wonders with his squad. He's got the best out of these players, and he has earned some credit, and he deserves time. If anyone deserves time, he does. And that's why I think he will. Whether he'll last the season, I don't know. It depends how bad it can get. But at the moment, a couple of bad results. Yes, that Bayern Munich one was very, very heavy, and no one expected them to lose 3-0 to Brighton either. But I think he's earned it to sort of stay and show that he can get them out of this sticky situation. Whereas Ole, I think it's a tough one with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because he's a club legend, and I think if it was any other manager in any other, if it was any other manager that's come to this Manchester United job, they might have gone already. You know, it's not acceptable. You look back at the Mourinho and his handling of this squad. He won them the Europa League. You could say he overachieved with this squad massively. And a club like Manchester United, that and a club is never too big to go down. And I know that sounds ridiculous. They are only 2 points off the relegation zone, and they play Liverpool next. Now, I know they had a lot of players out injured for the defeat at Newcastle, but you can just see that something is not right. I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is I don't know if he's the man for the job. I just think he's managed Cardiff, he's managed Molde in Norway. You can't go from managing those two clubs to managing a club like Manchester United. That's just not the next natural step. And it's such a big job. And he's got an impossible task, I think. And I think it's going to be really difficult for him to see out the season, especially in the situation they're in. And it does not look like getting better anytime soon.
You know, Olivia, you'd mentioned the struggles that they have domestically in the Premier League, but you know, you also have to look at what they're technically in a situation where, you know, obviously it's still two games in, still a couple games left to play in both the Champions League for Spurs and for the Europa League for Manchester United. You know, do you feel that if failure to get out of the group stage, or maybe, you know, Spurs transferring to the Europa League, you know, will that play into a factor given that the results really go badly for both these teams domestically as well?
I don't know if Spurs dropping down into the Europa League will change the situation. Obviously, they got to the final last year, but I think that was a massive overachievement for Poch. I don't think that they ever sort of... I'm not saying it was lucky, but they did have a lot of luck on the way. And I suppose they earned their luck. But I think this season, I think even if they drop into the Europa League, I still think Poch will be given that time to show what he can do. And I think he will be given the season. He's already said he wants to stay there 5 years. So I don't, and Daniel Levy, I don't think will sack him. So I don't think that'll come into play too much. Whereas Man United, obviously, they're already in the Europa League. So I think they'll get out of their group, and I think they'll progress to the knockouts easily, because the standard of teams in the Europa League is significantly lower than it is the Champions League. So I think that helps Man United. But you can't just rely... They haven't got the youngsters to rely on. The experienced players aren't stepping up. So I'm not really sure where Manchester United are going to go from here. You know, I think it's a really, really sticky situation, and I think they're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what does happen to both these teams and what happens to both these managers as well. So I guess sticking now to your beloved Chelsea, we have to speak about something that has been quite a cause of debate, not just here in the United States, but also in England. And it's obviously about Christian Pulisic, obviously the player that was bought in during the summer for $73 million, essentially coming in as really the replacement of Eden Hazard. There was a lot of expectation, I think, from both ends about a player that he was coming off of, you know, doing well at Borussia Dortmund, even though he wasn't really having much playing time towards the end of his time there because of being essentially replaced by Jadon Sancho. But looking into what has really been kind of a weird scenario, you know, the fact that he's already, he's played like, I think, three Premier League games, two of them where he's been subbed in. You know, he played over the weekend as well, gave an assist to Batshuayi's goal. You know, he has yet to play in the Champions League as well, being out of the squad against Lille in their win, and only playing in the EFL Cup as well. So we obviously know the kind of reassurance and new, I guess, team that Frank Lampard's trying to build with young players, you know, like Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount, Calvert-Lewin, those type of players. For Pulisic as well, and you know, he's still quite young. He's only 21 years old. But what has been the scenario, and I guess the opinion of the Chelsea fans based there in England in regards to the lack of Pulisic's playing time so far under Lampard?
It's really divided. You know, I've seen a lot of Chelsea fans that sort of agree with Frank Lampard, and a lot of Chelsea fans that think he's being harshly treated. The way I see it is, it's his first 8 games in English football. You can't, like, yes, he deserves a chance. He absolutely does. And he actually did well in the Super Cup. He played really well. But I think it's too soon for people to be like, yeah, let's just chuck him straight in. Because I've seen him play a few times this season, and I haven't been as impressed as I thought I should have been. As you said, he didn't play a lot towards the end of his Dortmund career because of Jadon Sancho. So to come into a whole new league, a very physical league, one that he's not used to, one he's never played in, I think Frank Lampard has completely the right, because we have such an inexperienced team at the moment. We're full of youngsters. We need those experienced players. And I think right now in the situation where we were in a few weeks ago, we needed the players like Willian, like Pedro, just a little bit of experience that know how to play and know how to win games in the Premier League. We just needed that, because we've got Mason Mount, we've got Tammy Abraham, we've got all of these young players that are coming in that we're trying not to rely on, really. With Pulisic, I think it's difficult because he will get his chance. He absolutely will. He's 21 years old. He's so young. And we have seen glimpses of brilliance. I really believe that. But when Frank Lampard says, yes, you have to work hard in training, there is obviously something that's not quite there in training. Other people are obviously working a lot harder than him. And as Chelsea guys, we can sit here and have our opinions, but at the end of the day, we don't see any of that. We don't see what goes on behind closed doors. And we've got to believe what Frank Lampard is saying. And he's saying people are working harder than him and people are going to get picked over him. And it's unfortunate for him now. I think it was really harsh for him to have left out the Lille squad completely. I think that was unnecessary. We didn't need two strikers on the bench. I thought he should have played or at least come on or been a sub. But we're in a position now. It's unfortunate for him because Willian is playing so well. And this is the first time for months and months and months that I can say Willian's had a spell of like three good games where he's either scoring or assisting and actually playing well. And that is not what Pulisic needs right now, when Callum Hudson-Odoi has just come back and it's quite clear he's going to be a big part of Frank Lampard's team. But I believe his chances will come. And as I said, the fans are divided. They are. Some of them think he's been unfairly treated, and some of them think, well, yeah, he will get his chance. And I'm one of the people that wants him to play a little bit more. I'd like to see him appear in the Champions League a little bit more. But at the same time, I'm so behind Frank Lampard, and I believe what he says, and I believe he's making the right decisions based on what he's seeing in training. Listen, he's young. He'll get his chances, absolutely.
And Joe, you know, jumping in real quick, you know, he actually gave a quote after that game towards, you know, that lack of playing time, saying, and I'm just reading it off here on Twitter, he said, "I'm not just going to throw a fit and give up ever. So if I'm on the bench, it doesn't mean the gaffer doesn't think I'm part of the team. I've just got to keep pushing and earn my spot. Frank likes players who show a lot in training, and I just have to continue to do that." So, you know, obviously this has been something, and obviously for you and I, Joe, we need to, you know, debate about this, given that he is the player on the national team. He's essentially their best player. So, you know, I just want your take on this whole situation. And, you know, do we really see a Christian Pulisic really just gel into that team eventually with time, given that he's still young and he has, you know, a lot of potential in his case? Or, you know, is it going to be a situation where, you know, we see maybe like an injury happen to one of these players and then he gets his chance? Because, you know, we have to, like Olivia said, we have to trust Frank Lampard and what he's doing in a team that is being refreshed and you know, promoting youth, which is a good thing given that, you know, they have that transfer ban. And we've seen already the resurgence of many youth players as well. So I just want your take on that, Joe.
Yeah, you know, I think part of it is, my answer is kind of all over the place. Initially, I do think that he's going to have to earn his way onto the spot. I think when the transfer was made last winter, many of us looked at this transfer as a replacement for Willian, that they would move him on. Now the transfer ban obviously kind of threw a monkey wrench into that situation, and then Willian stayed among other players. Now, when we look back at the transfer ban, you know, everyone talks about, oh, Chelsea's getting younger. No, Chelsea's always been this young, but they usually tend to loan these players out. And so, you know, you see Callum Hudson-Odoi hitting the pitch. You see Tammy Abraham. Everyone's talking about him now. He's kind of the flavor of the month because of what he's done so far, young players. But Frank Lampard's hand was partially forced into this position due to the transfer ban. So I think what that's done is that's kept a lot of the young competition in-house for Christian Pulisic. And I think he's going to have to jump over Mason Mount. He's going to have to jump over Willian. He's going to have to jump over some of these other players. And I think it's going to be a difficult task. Is he capable of doing it? Absolutely. We've seen Christian Pulisic really perform well in the Bundesliga. We've seen him perform well in Champions League. We've seen him do it at the national team level for the United States. So he's capable of being that person. The question is he going to get a fair chance? I would have to think so under Frank Lampard. You never know. It was a little concerning, like Olivia said, that he was totally left off the Lille, you know, pretty much left off the pitch against Lille in the Champions League, where there was an opportunity to play him there. Concerning that he didn't see the pitch in a Premier League match in the entire month of September. So, but when he comes out and he gets 8 minutes, he makes a massive, massive pass to Mishi Bashwai in a game that was pretty much decided, but still a great bit of skill holding up play and then laying that pass on for that fourth goal on the weekend. So is he capable of doing it? Yes. Will it take an injury? It might. But it's going to be a close situation, Rob. It's tough to say right now.
Absolutely. It's going to be really tough. But I think in the end, we just need to give time because, you know, we're 8 games into an entire 38-game season and you add in more Champions League games, you know, assuming that Chelsea do qualify to the latter stages of the tournament. And, you know, you got FA Cup, you have the EFL Cup. So you really have, you know, 50 games out there that, you know, you would assume Pulisic would get the opportunity to get to play these games. So it's still early. I think many people just need to realize that, you know, it's not the case of that he's just maybe not good enough, or, you know, that he's deserving a chance because of the money that was paid, you know, that big debate, as Olivia said. But it's just the case that there's just so many players that are coming up. And, you know, it ties into my next question now, Olivia, about these young players coming up. I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, as we previously mentioned, Tammy Abraham, he has 8 goals in the Premier League. We're seeing the resurgence of Mason Mount, who, you know, did tremendous at a Derby County under Lampard last season. You know, we see, you know, players like Loftus-Cheek, we see players like Callum Hudson-Odoi, you know, perform well, and you add into that experience of players like Willian, like N'Golo Kante, Jorginho. You know, you have those type of players in that mix. So I just want your take so far, Olivia, about the start of the season. You know, currently they're in fifth place, 14 points. You know, they're still fighting for that top spot in those spots in the Champions League. Be it a big gap now with them in Liverpool. But I just want your take so far, how you view Chelsea's season so far after 8 games and a few games in other championships.
I think Frank Lampard has exceeded all expectations. I think that no one expected us to be half as good as we are right now. And yes, there will be times we've seen, like, our defence is still very shaky. It is. And there are, like, inexperience, like Tomori, he has been brilliant. But yes, he makes a few mistakes, and that's just down to his inexperience. And hopefully Frank Lampard can stamp that out pretty quickly. But for our first 8 games in the Premier League, I'm so happy. Like, you just have the feel good factor is back at Stamford Bridge. The players feel it, the fans feel it, and no one but Frank Lampard was gonna bring that back. And I think the likes of Tammy Abraham and Mason Mount, we all knew that they had it in them, but to be finally given a chance to actually show what they can do for the club they've played for nearly their whole lives is something really special. And yes, they will perform, but we've also got the likes of Ruben Loftus-Cheek. When Callum Hudson-Odoi is fully fit, when Reece James is fully fit, when Ruben Loftus-Cheek is fully fit and back, I firmly believe that in 3 or 4 years' time, this team will be at the top of, like, I think they will be dominating English football. I really do. No matter how much money people might spend, I don't think you've got a better group of youngsters at one club in world football right now. So I think this season we've got to take it just as it is. I still think it's a write-off. I still think Frank Lampard could finish 10th and wouldn't get sacked. But to be fifth, to be, like, noticeably outperforming the likes of Manchester United, Tottenham, even Arsenal are sort of there or thereabouts. But I know it's only 8 games and it's fairly, like, soon into a season, but the top four is a very, very realistic, very realistic aim. Much more realistic than any Chelsea fan would have said at the start of the season. I think people were accepting a mid-table finish, but actually putting our faith in these youngsters has really paid off. And there will be big moments in this season, and there will be really low defeats. I think we've just got to get used to that. But as the first 8 games have gone, I don't think we could have asked much more from them, to be fair.
Do you feel like if they need to win something domestically, you know, obviously the Champions League might be a bit of a stretch given the other teams that are, you know, obviously much more stronger, but, you know, win an FA Cup or an EFL Cup, you know, would that bring much more of a deciding factor for Frank Lampard in his future? Or do you feel that, you know, whatever happens for this season, this will be more of a learning experience than trying to get his, you know, his feet wet into Premier League football?
Yeah, it's definitely a learning curve. I think although it would be really nice, we saw it with Sarri last season, it's always nice to win a trophy, and we will go out and we will try and win the Carabao Cup. And when you've got the big teams like City and Liverpool still in them, so it's going to be difficult. Every club competition, every competition in football is difficult to win. But we'll definitely try. I don't think we'll be one of those teams that plays weaker teams to try and just because they want to focus on another competition. I think we'll go all out for the trophies that we're in. But I do believe that this season, it's not a write-off. It is in a way. It's almost like a free hit, I think, because as long as we don't finish in the bottom three, which obviously we're not going to by the looks of it, I think Frank Lampard is really, this is a transition season. I think he's got a whole year to sort of just ride the wave, learn about his team, and you can already see what he's trying to do. You can already see what he's trying to implement in his style of football and stuff like that. So I don't think a trophy will matter at the end of it. It would be nice. It would be just like an extra, but I think Roman knows what he's doing. And I think Frank Lampard will be given the money in the summer. We've got a lot of money. We've got the Hazard money. We've got Morata's money is coming in as well. So we've got the money. We've got over 200 million there to spend. So as long as he buys the right players that will fit his system and they know his style and will sort of come and do that, then I don't believe a trophy will play a part in it at all. And I think he'll be, a touch wood, he'll be at Chelsea for a very long time.
Definitely. And I think given the respect that he's always had at the club as a player, I think, you know, the fact that he'll always earn that respect, it's going to be inevitable of what he could achieve. And hopefully that this season, it will be a learning experience, a learning career, as you said. So it will take time, obviously. You know, there are people that maybe will expect too much, given that, you know, it's Chelsea, you know, they have this kind of understanding and mentality to be successful, given, you know, what they have achieved in the last, you know, 15 years. But, you know, this is completely different now. Into now the races, well, before we get into, obviously, the race that we might see in England, just this is a tweet that I sent to Joe this morning, looking at, it was from, I think, Goal. Looking into Spain, we have 3 points separating the top three. In Italy, we also have 3 points separating the top three. In France, we have 5 points being separated. In Germany, we have 2 points separating the top three. But in England, you know, given that it's been completely different, we see Liverpool with 24 points, you know, an 8-point gap between second place Manchester City, where, you know, to be fair, the big race here is what we're seeing here in the top four and for these European spots. But, you know, Olivia, just looking real quick, and you know, obviously last season was just so dramatic, and you know, that all the way to the end where, you know, many people were assuming that it was going to be decided between Liverpool and Manchester City. You know, Liverpool just only missing it out on the last day, even though they did win the Champions League. You know, this season has been quite different. You know, I think the mentality has been for them to realize that, you know, winning the Champions League is great, but I think the main objective for a lot of these fans is to finally win, you know, the Premier League, you know, something that other teams have done, you know. And in Manchester City's case, you know, we kind of maybe see kind of a Champions hangover, I would say. I mean, obviously not as big as other teams have done it, but, you know, you look at what they have already, you know, they lost to Wolves over the weekend. Yeah. Is this a case of that, or do you feel that Liverpool has just become much more stronger within the start of the season?
I don't. It's pretty much the same Liverpool team, isn't it, that went the whole of last season toe to toe with City. I just see, like, City have been so unlucky with the injuries, a massive injury to their best defender in Laporte, and he's out until the new year. You've got Sane is the same, who was a very effective player for Man City last season. They lost Vincent Kompany as well. So I think a majority, like quite a few things have played into this. I think Liverpool, whether they earn their own luck or they just get it, they have been lucky already this season. We've seen that in the first 8 games, but it's 8 games into a season. Liverpool were 7 points clear at Christmas last year, and we all saw what happened. So I think it's a little bit too soon to be. It's obviously a great lead. I think it's the biggest ever lead in the Premier League, in Premier League history at this point, 8 games into a season, the biggest lead that anyone's ever had. And obviously they're in a great position. I don't think, you look at their squad, they haven't really improved it, have they? That squad was always good enough to win a Premier League title, we saw last year. Whether it'll be this year, their year or not this year, I'm not sure. We're just going to have to, only time will tell. But it does seem that maybe Liverpool will be putting all their eggs into the Premier League this year, whilst Man City, it's funny because last season they both won the titles that each other wanted to win, really. So this season, I think we'll see City go for it more in the Champions League and Liverpool more in the Premier League. And if it comes off, then both teams have got what they wanted. But I still think it's going to be a great title race. I still think City will be in it. They're Manchester City, do you know what I mean? We've seen them over the past few years dominate English football. And when they get it right, they get it right. They're unbelievable. But just Liverpool just looks such a force right now. They don't look like slowing down. They don't look like stopping. They don't look like losing. So, they've got a couple of tough fixtures coming up now, Liverpool. I think they play Arsenal and Tottenham and Man City, I think, very, very soon. So they've got to, if they can get through this little run sort of unscathed, not dropping too many points, then, yeah, you could say they are, the title is looking, yeah, like it could be heading to Anfield. But I think it is also quite soon to be calling that. I think Christmas time is always quite a good point to be sort of analysing when, if a team's going to be like sort of up there or not. But you can't fault the start they've had. Obviously, it's been perfect.
No doubt about it. Before we let you go, I want to close with one more Chelsea question. And something I was thinking about as we were having our conversation. We talked about how all the young players have been brought out onto the pitch. You know, Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount, Callum Hudson-Odoi seeing more time. Christian Pulisic, although did not come up through the system, is there now as one of the younger players. When we look back on this season, Olivia, and we look back on Chelsea, wherever they finish, whether it be in the European positions, whether it be mid-table, when we look back on it, will we look back and say to ourselves that the transfer ban actually helped Chelsea in the long term?
Yeah, do you know what? I called it. When we got told we were having a transfer ban, I said this is going to be a blessing in disguise. Because none of these players have ever had a chance. We've had manager after manager after manager that have just wanted experienced players that know how to play in the Premier League and they want it now. And the fans have been a little bit, we've been so used to success so instantly that I don't think some of the fans were willing to give them a chance. And it's just taken this one, obviously Frank Lampard coming in. I don't think any other manager right now would have done a better job than he's doing, given how much he knows the youth and how much faith he's put in them. But it is, because you look, if we had money, we probably would have gone and spent big. We had that 120 million for Eden Hazard, and we could have gone and spent that. If we'd have been able to, we probably would have. So I think it is a blessing in disguise, and we're seeing just glimpses. I think this is just the start for this team. Like, they're all exceeding expectations. They've all been brilliant. They're all showing us that like, look what can happen if you just put a little bit of faith in us. So, like, we can do it. We know what we're doing. Do you know what I mean? And I think, yeah, I think looking back, I think no matter where we finish, it's looking good right now, obviously, but come May, it might be a different story. But regardless, I think for these youngsters and for this Chelsea team and for how Frank Lampard wants to play, yeah, it's definitely a blessing in disguise.
No doubt. Olivia, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us tonight. All the best. Before we let you go, can you let the folks listening here find out where they can find you on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My at is Olivia Bazaglo. I usually tweet about Chelsea, but most football as well. So you can find me on there.
Fantastic stuff. Thanks again. We appreciate you coming on the show and look forward to having you on again soon.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
And that was Olivia Bazaglo joining us a little earlier on, just before we started to hit the record button here. Rob, let's jump all the way across the Atlantic Ocean and let's get over to Copa Libertadores. Obviously, the first leg of the semifinals was played last week. We had two great, great matches to talk about in this one. Of course, the first one, Grêmio Flamengo, which is a massive Brazilian battle. And then, of course, the Super Clásico with River and Boca Juniors. Let's take these all... let's start in Brazil, Rob. Can we do that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Grêmio and Flamengo played to a 1-1 draw in the first leg at Grêmio. Goals by Enrique for Flamengo in the 69th minute and Pepe in the 88th minute for Grêmio. Grêmio for me, Rob, in this particular matchup when I watched it, seemed to have the better piece of the play. And that would make sense given that they were playing at home. But Flamengo on that 69th minute goal really was against the run of play. And it took everything for Grêmio to come back in this one. You wonder if Grêmio is going to be able to turn it around on the second leg, or is this Gabigol's time to run to the Libertadores final?
Well, I think, you mentioned that Grêmio had played, and I think you told me you only watched the second half of that game.
Yeah.
So, I watched the entire game, and from what I saw in the first half, Flamengo should have been up like 3-4 goals already. You know, they did get two goals taken away by VAR from obviously Gabi's goal. So, you know, I think it was the case of a different story. You know, Flamengo were dominant in the first half, having a lot of opportunities. It was really unfortunate that they weren't able to put it away due to VAR interfering. But yeah, I think Gremio definitely got a lifeline there to get a draw at home, which is not an acceptable result anyway. But given that they were down for a good 20 minutes, you could say that it is relatively a result that is respectable. But you know, now they have to go to the second leg at the Maracanã, you know, packed crowd. You know, this is the first time Flamengo's playing in a semifinal in like over 35 years. So much going to be made. The vibe is in the air. And I think if Grêmio had was able to you know, score a couple more goals, or, you know, keep Flamengo without having to score a goal, I think this would have been a different story. But now Flamengo's really in pole position to really show in front of a home crowd that, you know, they're really going for this final. They're really going for this title. And I think that, you know, we will see them in that final in Santiago.
So you don't think, I mean, you know, I look back on a player like Everton for Grêmio, who's who really burst on the scene. You know, if you go back to the Copa America over the summer, he really kind of burst on the scene with the absence of Neymar. You know, can he do something different? You know, can he change the way he plays this match, second leg, you know, at Flamengo to make a difference?
It would have to be like an early goal. I think if Grêmio get the early goal, not only do they get the lead, but they also obviously get that away goal, which is important. Flamengo do have that away goal. So, you know, you look at now a scenario that, you know, they could force into penalties given that Flamengo score and make it a 1-1 draw. So, yeah, I think this will be really, really interesting to see what he's able to do. You know, he did provide the assist in the goal for Pepe's goal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you did see that kind of talent. But I think just Flamengo, the way that they played, you know, and Gabigol being on form of his career so far, you know, 17 goals in 15 games in all competitions, I think you have to favor the host in this one. I think assuming that Grêmio will be able to get something early on, I just don't see them getting past Flamengo, especially given the fact that they do have that away goal to consider.
It's a massive hill to climb for Grêmio, for sure. Let's go over to the second semifinal, the Super Clásico. River Plate takes the first leg 2-0 over Boca Juniors. And Rob, you know, I did get to see a good portion of this particular match as well, although it was the same time as my personal match. But, man, I've got to tell you, this one looked like one-way traffic to me. Like, this did not look like an evenly matched River-Boca matchup that we've seen in the past. This looked like River were on a mission and kind of took everything to Boca. Boca really stood no chance in this one. What do you think?
Yeah, I think what we always see about when we talk about Super Clásicos, we always talk about how, you know, it's so unpredictable regardless of what they provide, you know, the status of both teams, the depth that they have, the talent that they have. But just watching that game, the whole 90 minutes, River were completely on top of Boca. You know, the fact that they were able to get that penalty early on and then another goal for Fernandez really gives a big blow to Boca. I mean, you know, it should have been more. You know, the fact that it was 2-0, maybe it was a bit more nicely, to put it this way. But, you know, it was also unfortunate they got their player sent off towards the end of the game. But there's one silver lining that you might get is that, you know, it's 2-0, Joe. I mean, is a series really over at that stage? You know, given the fact that, one, it's a Super Clásico, two, now they have to go to La Bombonera to play the second. Mind you, Joe, you know, we're talking about this. If it happens,
right?
Mind you, we still don't know. I mean, you know, there's been debates about how this game might be moved after the election. There's a presidential election that's happening that could be moved after it. That, to be fair, a game like this could indeed. That's how crazy this country is, Joe. The fact that one game could indeed influence an election. That's just how big, you know, these two teams are, and, you know, this, I guess, what how intense their rivalry is. So for that to happen, man, this second one's going to be much more. I think people would expect that with this 2-0 result that series is over. But to be fair, this is still open. I mean, you know, you're going into a packed Bombonera, and you know what it's like to play there. You know, the fact that, you know, 55,000 people jumping up and down and chanting for 90 minutes, that gives that has some factor to you. So we'll see. I think from that perspective, you would still have to wait to see what happens with these teams. But I think if River do play the way that they did play in those 90 minutes at El Monumental, I think I see them back into a final this time for the second straight year.
Rafael Borre and Ignacio Fernandez with the goals in that one, all left to play at the Bombonera. To give you to give the listeners an idea, the next matchups are going to be on the 22nd of October at La Bombonera and the 23rd of October at the Maracana for the Flamengo Gremio match. So looking forward to those two matchups as well. Let's jump over to MLS real quick, Rob. And, you know, obviously you got the chance to watch the Atlanta United match live and in person. Decision day is over. And really the teams that we expected to be there got there, right? We look at Portland with a 3-1 victory over San Jose, eliminating them. LAFC with a 3-1 victory over Colorado, eliminating them as well. Dallas held their own, I believe, the match. I want to say it was 5-1, 6-1, 6-0 over Sporting Kansas City, which was an embarrassment. The only other real interesting result, and it kind of ruined, you and I kind of joked about it, that in the next round, if things held, that not only will we have an LA derby, but we'd also have a New York derby. The New York derby got messed up, and that is because, New York Red Bull drop a 3-0 decision to the Montreal Impact in that one. So the results, and I'm going to go and look for my brackets here quickly. We are looking at the round of 16, if you really want to look at it that way, but the play-in round. Toronto, DC United, Atlanta United, New England Revolution. I had mentioned the replay of last weekend's matchup. Philadelphia Union are going to be at home to New York Red Bull. Now, New York Red Bull, really, with the 3-0 defeat, threw away a home match on this one. And we go to the Western Conference. LAFC completes the season, but, Rob, I think you really have to say that they are on path for the greatest season in the history of MLS right now, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. But LAFC get the bye. They're going to play the winner of the Minnesota United-LA Galaxy match. And again, Rob, throwing away an opportunity, the LA Galaxy with a win would have picked up a home match. Now, instead, they dropped all the way down to where they're going to they have to go to Minnesota. I just wanted to look at they lost 4-2 to the Houston Dynamo, a team that knocked them out of the playoffs last year, if you remember. So they got to play Minnesota United, and then we'll get our El Tráfico if the Galaxy do get past United. The other matchups are Seattle Sounders, FC Dallas, and Real Salt Lake and the Portland Timbers. I had alluded to earlier, Nick Raimondo can't hang up his goalie gloves just yet, as he still has more football to play. So, you know, the matchups here are intriguing. Philly, New York Red Bull is intriguing in the fact that Philly has really made a resurgence. We talked about that last week. Atlanta United look like they're starting to get back into the swing of things, you know, what we would have expected out of them. So that's excellent to see as well. Atlanta United finished second in the conference behind NYCFC. Philly finished third, Toronto fourth, DC fifth, Red Bull sixth, and the Revolution seventh. Going back up to the Western Conference, behind LAFC, Seattle Sounders moved all the way up to the second spot. Real Salt Lake finished third, Minnesota United fourth, the LA Galaxy fifth, Timber sixth, and FC Dallas seventh. Minnesota United losing to Seattle Sounders and then losing that second place spot that they had. Rob, I want to look at one more thing. We'll obviously get into those matchups a little bit more next week. But from a goal scoring perspective, I would like to argue with you that this is the greatest goal scoring season in the history of MLS. Obviously, we saw Carlos Vela break the 1-year-old record from Joseph Martinez, 31 goals, scoring 34 on the weekend, with a hat trick against Tim Howard. The second goal that he scored was just magnificent. And yeah, if you get the chance, definitely go back and see it. So Carlos Vela breaks the single season goal scoring record. Joseph Martinez still stands second on that list from last year's record, 31 match goals. Third place on that list, Rob, is another 2019 performance. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, 30 goals. Only three players have ever broken 30 goals in MLS. And we had them all done in the last 2 years, and two of them done this year. Then we go back to 27 goals, which was Roy Lassiter, Chris Wondolowski, and Bradley Wright Phillips. You remember Bradley Wright Phillips, the big deal was made about him getting there with more games. You remember we talked about that a few years ago? But now we have a fourth player that scored 27 goals, Joseph Martinez. He does it again this year. So we've got Vela at 34, Zlatan at 30, Joseph Martinez at 27. Joseph Martinez also, you know, pops the 31 last year, breaking the record. This has got to be the greatest goal scoring season we've seen, quite possibly in the history of a single league, don't you think?
Well, it's actually funny, Joe. There's actually more goals. There was more goals scored last season than there are this season. But yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, we've seen three players that have really stand out for, you know, one of the best teams and three of the best teams in MLS. I mean, you know, you have Carlos Vela breaking that record and Zlatan doing what he does best at LA Galaxy. And then you have Joseph Martinez as well, who has put it on form, even though it has been a slow start of the season, I would say. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, you're looking at what is intriguing. The fact that, you know, from third to fourth place, you know, Martinez with 27 and Diego Rossi with 16, the gap of 11 goals. That's huge. That's really big. And I think that, you know, what we've seen, I think we could say in the last 2 years, ever since both these teams have been created, you know, LA United and LAFC, that we're seeing these kind of records come to shape. You know, we're seeing people hit 30 goals and we're seeing that being done by multiple players. So it's been great to see, I think, for the league, the fact that, you know, we're seeing a lot of goals being scored, and we're seeing, you know, standout players coming out as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been really exciting to see. And I can't wait for the playoffs because I think that's where we'll probably have to see them shine. Because, you know, I think, be it that the team, whoever does make it to either the MLS Cup final wins, I think it will all depend on the form that these three particular players will be on, mm-hmm. and how important they will be on for their teams in the playoffs.
No doubt about it. When we come back next week, we'll definitely give a deeper preview into the matchups coming up in the MLS playoffs. So last topic I want to talk about, Rob, tonight is the Derby d'Italia. A slightly controversial Derby d'Italia, but certainly I would say the most exciting football match we saw on the weekend. Juventus goes into the San Siro, defeats Inter, you know, Inter, their first blemish on their domestic campaign record this year with a 2-1 victory. All goals scored by Argentinians, Rob. Paulo Dybala opening the scoring in the third minute. And really, you know, and I'll get back to Dybala in a second. Then Lautaro Martinez on a penalty in the 17th minute, and then Higuain with the winner in the 79th minute. Starting with Dybala, what a magnificent match for him. He just goes to show you that he can absolutely link up with Cristiano Ronaldo. And for me, Juve were dominant in this match. I mean, maybe dominant's not the right word. They were the better team, okay? And much of it was to do with the link-up play between Ronaldo and Dybala. You really, in the first half, and if you watched Juventus Twitter, many would say they didn't realize Federico Bernardeschi was even on the pitch because that's how out of the way he was compared to what Dybala and Cristiano Ronaldo were doing. It was a fantastic performance. The Lautaro penalty was a handball on De Ligt. You know, I'm still looking for a good angle to see De Ligt's hand touch the ball first or arm touch the ball first. I actually haven't seen it yet, and I've been looking for it. So if anyone has a good view of the video of Matthijs De Ligt handballing, or at least the ball hitting his hand first before Lautaro's hand, please message it to me at JPUcello. You know, link me on Twitter. I want to see it. I'm not denying that it happened. I just want to see a better angle of it. Thirdly, Paulo Dybala, a lot of Inter Twitter was up in arms about Dybala, quote unquote, diving towards the end of the first half. Rob, I don't know if you saw that play as he ran into the box by Diego Godin. Godin contacted him with his hand and then he went down. And Inter Twitter were up in arms because they thought he should have gotten a yellow card for it. Nicola Barella actually in the second half did get a yellow card for diving. I would have agreed until you saw the front view of Paulo Dybala, where Godin's hand really kind of slaps him in the private parts. And I'll tell you right now, especially if Dybala's not wearing a cup, if that happened to you or me, Rob, we're not diving. We're just going down. Okay. That has got to be one of the more painful bits of contact you'll ever see. Was it enough in the soccer sense to bring somebody down? No. Was it enough in the live person sense to bring somebody down? Absolutely. So I don't, you know, would I have called it a foul? No, I get that they didn't blow the whistle. No problem. But I certainly would not have given a penalty for diving there. It almost reminded me a little bit. Remember, Rob, in the 2015 Copa America, it was Jara for Chile, what he did with his finger to, I want to say it was Edison Cavani.
Yep.
Do you remember? Okay.
Yes. Yes, I know.
Some reminder of that in the terms of somebody going after somebody's private parts, or at least whether it would be on purpose or accidentally. That's where I was with the Dybala thing. But in the end, Juve were the better team on the day. Juve deserved a win. And like I said in the opening monologue, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And Inter's going to get another shot at this. This race is not over by any stretch of the imagination. And no one's talking about Atalanta right now, but they're the team, the third team within 3 points of Juve right now. So this is going to be a tight race, I think, for quite a while, Rob. But, you know, in the end, I think the better team won. I mean, I don't know if you were able to catch the highlights because this happened about the same time as the as you were in the parking lot in Atlanta. But if you got a chance to catch the highlights or at least the reactions to the match, what did you think of what's been said or what you saw?
Well, I didn't see the game. I saw a little bit of the highlights, saw the goals. But at the same time, I think we could really see a tale of three players, really. You know, look at Dybala getting his confidence back and what really has been a, I guess, a resurgence of the season, him trying to get his form back and really being able to provide a lot for Juventus. I think even though he did get the loss with Lautaro Martinez, you're really seeing him being an important player, stepping up in those important goals. You know, he's scoring against Barcelona midweek in the Champions League, and then this one against Juventus. sorry. It shows that he is an important player and, you know, a decent replacement, I guess, well, for Mario Icardi so far. Mm-hmm. And look at Gonzalo Higuain. I think if you talk about a player that has been really, really been on tremendous form, it's him. I mean, and credit to that is, I think, the manager. I think Mauricio Sarri knows him very well. And the fact that he's been able to really demonstrate his capability and just become a force of nature, if we could say. Yeah, he's been tremendous so far this season for Juventus. So, yeah, you look at a tale of three Argentines in different scenarios, both on a positive standpoint. I think all of them, will take some positives. I think, obviously, Inter losing gives them that kind of negativity, the fact that they weren't able to beat essentially their rival for the Scudetto, even though the race isn't over. You would have to be proud, or at least, you know, demonstrate some sort of plaudits to all three of these players for what they've been able to do in the last few weeks.
Yeah, losing Sensi to injury early in the match, and then also losing Godin to injury in the match as well, and still being able to hold tight, I think bodes well for Inter, you know, and Antonio Conte and what he's trying to do. It'd be interesting to see how they bounce back from this. They're going to get a week to think about it with the international break coming up, and then we'll see how Inter handle this moving on in the season. So, with that said, let's get into the matches of the week. Obviously, like I said, MLS playoffs start on October 19th, so we won't give you any MLS matches to really talk about for this week. But we do have Euro qualifiers, and we have the CONCACAF Nations League. So on Thursday, in Group E, we have Croatia playing Hungary at 2:45 p.m., and we also have the Netherlands, Northern Ireland at 2:45 p.m. That's a Group C matchup with a position on the line there. And in the CONCACAF Nations League, we have Haiti hosting Costa Rica at 9 p.m. on Thursday. On Friday, we look at Group A, where Czech Republic is going to play England at 2:45 p.m. And in the Nations League, we have USA-Cuba at 7 p.m. and Bermuda-Mexico at 9 p.m. On Saturday, we have a couple of big matchups. In Group D, we have in the Euros, Denmark-Switzerland at noon, and we have Italy-Greece fancying their new uniforms on the weekend. Italy playing Greece at 2:45 p.m. That's a Group J matchup. Italy can all but settle their way to the European Championships next year with a win there. And on Sunday, Wales-Croatia, Group E matchup at 2:45 p.m., and we're going to close it out with a CONCACAF Nations League match of Costa Rica-Curaçao at 8 p.m. If you look back to the Gold Cup, Rob, Curaçao had a fantastic run, and I think this is a spot for them where they might be able to cause a little trouble. So, it'll be interesting to see how they perform in the Nations League moving forward. Let's go back to the trivia question real quick, Rob. Again, going back to the Derby d'Italia, Gonzalo Higuain scored the game winner for Juve on the weekend. He also scored the game winner the last time Juventus beat Inter at the San Siro on April 28th of 2014. However, he is not in the top 15 of all-time goal scorers in the matchup. Can you name the only two active players in the top 15 of goal scoring in the Derby d'Italia?
Okay, so I think one will have to be a player that has played for both. So the first name that I'm going to give you is Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
No, he's not on the list.
Not on the list.
Good guess.
I guess. Oh, how about Mauro Icardi?
Mauro Icardi's tied for 11th on this list. He's got 5 goals. He's tied with Sandro Mazzola and Roberto Bottega. Talk about a couple of legends there. You've got one more. Okay. He played for Juventus. Okay. He's currently still active.
He played
for Juventus. He no longer plays there. Neither of these players play in the Derby d'Italia anymore. So obviously you got one with Icardi.
Does this player still play in Italy?
No.
Okay. That's a tough one.
I think you were thinking Fernando Llorente there for a second.
I was thinking, yeah. No, I wasn't, because I always think, wait, I think I have a name, because he seems to pop up in these kind of things. Is it Alvaro Morata?
Tied for 14th with, talk about legends, Michel Platini and Christian Vieri. 4 goals. So your answer, the only two active players in the top 15 of goal scoring in the Derby d'Italia, Mauro Icardi, 5 goals, tied for 11th, and Alvaro Morata tied for 14th with 4 goals. Your trivia question of the night.
How many does Higuain have?
I think he just has the two.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so then there you go.
I'm surprised he was not in there, considering he's played for both clubs.
He's played for both clubs, I know. Yeah, he's not in there. He's not on that list. I'll bet you these guys are sitting at like 3.
Yeah, so, you know, probably.
And just off the pace, so.
Yep.
Rob, well, I don't have anything else on the docket, so let's hit the closing music.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, man. Another great show and a great guest and a great time. So, for episode 257 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Olivia Bozzaglo for joining us. Next week, we will give you a recap on the Nations League. We'll give you a recap on the European qualifiers. And we'll take a look at the MLS matchups for MLS playoffs, as well as get ready for Champions League again. So, for episode 257 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.